Welcome to today's fellowship-wide call and on BD on Business, Debtors Anonymous. We have three people telling our story, and the caucus is the BDA from the WSC World Service Conference. And I am George, and I am a debtor from Vancouver, BC, in Canada. And please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Courage to change the things I can. And wisdom to know the difference.
Thy will, not mine, be done.
Okay, our call today will include three speakers. So our first speaker is Lizelle, and she's from Vancouver, BC. And welcome to the call, Lizelle. And you have between 12 and 15 minutes.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lizelle, compulsive debtor, spender, and business owner. Grateful to be here. And so I had five children and felt the need that I never had enough. I never had enough pants, never had enough backpacks, never had good enough stuff. And there was one day I purchased the 80th pair of pants for each of them. And I sat in my car and I thought, I have a problem. And the only way to stop is to drive off a bridge. Like, I can't stop. And my husband would say, I'm very scared anytime we even stop at a gas station because you'll find something to buy. You just have to spend money. I don't understand it. He is saving money constantly. And we had great income. And I was just flying through it all without, just could not control the spending. And I felt the only way to stop was to be forced to stop and to drive off a bridge. So I called my best friend and I said, I think I have a problem. Like, I can't stop buying 80 pairs of pants each. That's a lot of laundry. It's unnecessary. And it felt insatiable. Like, there was never enough. And I could never pass up a deal. It didn't matter how much it was, and it didn't matter how much I had. It was just, it was insane. And my friend said, in a joking way, you should go to Shopaholics Anonymous. And I was like, oh, that doesn't exist. Like, that's not a real thing. And he was like, no, I'm serious. Maybe look for something like that, like a support group. And so I looked it up. It was a Friday afternoon, and I looked it up, and it, sure enough, there was a schedule for Debtors Anonymous. This one, however, was a Business Debtors Anonymous on Saturday morning. And I thought, I called in the morning and someone picked up and they said, I'm not a business owner, but I really need help ASAP. And they're like, come on in. And so I walked in and, oh, wow, to be among people who understood the compulsion, who understood the shame, and to have similar stories, and then to see their recovery in the even millions, and to see there's hope, you know, coming from such despair that I'm feeling, and feeling like I was dragging my family down with me. And so I started to come weekly, and at the time I was a stay-at-home mom, incurring debt, just, you know, hiding it from my husband. And obviously he could see, like, money down the drain with all these bags of clothes and just insurmountable stuff, and just starting to actually even become a hoarder, just feeling so ill in my mind, even though it didn't look like it, I guess, to the outside world. But I was really quite sick and starting to fall into depression, where, and even having like suicidal ideation, because I just couldn't stop spending and buying things I did not need. And going into DA week after week, hearing the literature and, you know, learning things that were so crucial to my recovery, like, you know, buying things should be as mundane as mailing a letter. You know, whenever I go shopping, I get this high, like I'm just like, I'm sweating. I just feel like, this is awesome. And it's what kept me going, what kept me feeling like alive. and like I could handle other things. It was such an escape. But when I learned through Business Debtors Anonymous that it's a part of my sickness, and that we never are healed, but we're always in recovery, which is why we need to come every week. We need a sponsor. We need pressure relief meetings. I mean, I thought about it, like, what is a pressure relief meeting? But it truly, it was the pressure that I was feeling about life that caused me to make these sporadic and these decisions just to like feel like I wasn't drowning. And I'd buy something and I feel like, okay, I can kind of face life again. And to find out, you know, it's like resetting like my oxytocin or dopamine hit. But learning to look at the numbers every day, not incurring unsecured debt, keeping track of my numbers, and then having a spending plan so I'm not feeling like I'm choking, you know, and then having dreams. And from that, I was able to save enough money and no longer feel like I had to drive myself off a bridge in order to do life. I would have to, you know, go to the checkout counter and pray. I still do this. I look at everything. Do I really need this? Is this an emotional purchase or going with lists? And sometimes, like, I would just leave everything because I'm like, wow, this is all emotional. This is not a need. This is not in my spending plan. And to, you know, I used to feel like everyone was watching me, or it was like a shame thing or like a pride thing. And now it's just as mundane as mailing a letter. It's just life. It's just something I have to do, and we have to eat. We need groceries, you know, and the addiction of spending is a bit different because we always have to spend. There's something, you know, it's a currency we need in life. And, you know, hearing that the universe is abundant and there's enough for everyone, to not worry about the competitors, you know, to not think your accountant and lawyers are your higher power. I mean, the literature is just so beautiful and supportive that it like took away all the shame and guilt and fear. And mind you, it still kind of pops up sometimes when I forget, you know, when I go back into my old habits. But all to say this, because of this program, I was able to acquire, from not having any property to two pieces of property and in the millions. And I am now a business owner. I own my own corporation, and we have grown so much. It hasn't even been 2 years. It's been a year and a half, and we're expanding so much. And if I was still as sick as I was when I first started the program, there's no way I would be able to manage my finances and be able to pay for tax and to be able to pay for the accountants and the lawyers and grow the business, my employees, like this, that, and the next thing. And because of this program, I'm able to make very difficult decisions and face things that, you know, I was reminded yesterday when I was very sick before coming to DA, and even the beginning of Debtors Anonymous, my attendance there, I would stand by the door because I could not even call TELUS or send an email and to collect the insurance that was owed to me. I'd have to get my husband to pick a draft and send it because I was so crippled in anxiety and fear. And to now, I am, you know, this week I changed my corporate lawyer because I realized, you know what, they're not doing the work that I'd like to see done. I'm making executive decisions, and it's because of this program. It's given me the confidence and the steps, you know, to make sound decisions based on principle, and I have the support that at weekly, also having incredible sponsors who take the shame out of numbers. Like when my numbers change, I'm not okay. When I don't have a spending plan, I just the chaos and the vagueness does not help me at all. And I think I'm not the only person, I believe. And so that's why I guess it's a part of our program. And so having a pressure relief meeting with sponsors and people who have worked the program as well is honestly, to me, the most godly thing on this earth. It's where you are with people who are safe, where you can be vulnerable, like your most truthful self, where anywhere else you'd feel so much shame. In this space and in this program, it's like the biggest hope, the world's best. It's a secret in a sense because of the anonymity, but it's like, it's the breath of air that I needed, and it saved my life. And now I know I'm still sick inside. You know, if I didn't have my sponsors, I didn't have this program, the principles and the literature and the support, I think I would be just in so much trouble because I do still experience that anxiety. But when I look at my books, when I sit down and, you know, with the receipts, these receipts used to give me stress. And now I know that I need to scan the receipts. I need to send them off to the bookkeeper. I need to keep track of the numbers. And this is a part of my recovery. I think when these are broken down for me into palatable and like doable steps, it's so respectable. Like I feel like a human. I feel like this program helps you recover with dignity and helps you learn to take care of yourself and to reach those goals. I mean, when you have a spending plan and they have a dream in there, like a trip, you know, it's not trying to deprive you or me of something that we want. It's actually supportive. And where money is used as a tool to help us build the life that we want instead of feeling like we're victims of this insatiable need to spend and spend. And so week after week, I come. I also message my sponsor and the steps that they come up with. For example, they looked at my numbers and said, your business needs to bring in $9,000 more a month. And I'm thinking, okay, how am I going to do that? And it gave me the courage to step outside the box and be daring to do things that I am capable of doing. It's so new. But to have, people wishing me well and encouraging me and also showing me the areas that are quite dangerous as well. Like, okay, don't do that. Don't do that. And you know what? They were right. They were absolutely right with everything they've seen. So it's so beautiful. The program works. Someone used to say, after the surrender deep prayer, they'd say, keep coming back. It works when you work it and you're worth it. I think a lot of the time I feel a lot of shame. And I don't feel worth it. I feel, why can't I manage my books the way my husband and other people can manage their books or even talk about money? There's so much drama, like standing in front of the till trying to move money around. Or sometimes you think, I don't know, is this going to go through? I don't know if there's money in there or not. And to be able to know and follow how much money is in there and how much did this cost? And, to compare prices before buying and to, send out invoices and expect them to be paid in a timely manner and to make decisions that is best for my family and for my finances and my business. So I have come a long way, a long, long way. I believe I stepped into Business Debtors Anonymous, I want to say maybe 10 years ago, maybe more. And the fact is, I wasn't a business person. I didn't like business, but I really believe like being exposed to the literature, it started to form my mind into how to deal with Business Debtors Anonymous mindset and help me frame in a healthy way. And now I'm so grateful. Like when I look back, like I have assets, I have money, and I'm able to help others, as opposed to before I'd always think that there's someone there to rescue me, multiple times, like someone's going to rescue me, is what I always felt was going to happen. And when I look at my numbers now, I know it's because of the program, you know, following week after week, what is allotted to you, and with the cash that you are supposed to allot for this particular item or expense, and then watching that money grow and having the money to pay for these things that are going to come up, like taxes, and no longer feeling surprised.
That's tongue.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Lizelle. That was great and wonderful. And I was lucky. I remember Lizelle when she came into her first meeting. I was sitting there. And you've come a long way. It's good to see and hear from you. So our next speaker is Monty. And Monty hails from South Carolina. And I met Monty at World Service Conference in London a couple of years ago. And we hit it off, and we've been talking ever since. So, Monty, would you like to take 50 minutes to tell us your story?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yep. Yeah, you're good.
Okay. Good. And for the timer. Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't hear you tell the time on the last one to the end. So if you'll interrupt me really good and let me know, or else I'll run like a machine and never turn off. But could you let me know after once 5 minutes is up, and then once 10 minutes is up, and then once 14 minutes is up? And that should give me a minute before I'm done.
You got it, Monty.
All right. Thank you. Hi, everybody. My name is Monty, and I am a compulsive business debtor from Raleigh, North Carolina. And George, I wasn't born and raised here. I was born and raised in Texas, but I married a North Carolina girl. But to everybody in North Carolina, those are fighting words when you say they're from South Carolina, just so you know.
Sorry,
thank you for that.
Won't happen again.
It doesn't bother me. I'm here because it makes my wife happy, and I'm a Texan through and through. But I'm from Raleigh. My solvency date is June the 30th of 2020. If the Lord tarries and the creek don't rise, and I can take it one more day at a time, another month or two, I'll have 5 full years, which I'm
nice.
Amazed about and surprised about and ecstatic about. If I was going to title this sharing, it would be my BDA journey from fear to love. Mm. And I'm taking my topic from the preamble of my Monday morning BDA step meeting. One line in there says, we value our goods and services and price them accordingly. And I'll start with, I'd like to tell how that valuing of my goods and services has come about. It did not happen instantly. So what it was like, I came into the program isolated. So, I was out of touch with reality, especially the reality of inflation. I came in as an approval seeker, and that's hard to raise your prices when you're trying to get approval from your customers. I came in frightened of personal criticism. So I was so scared to raise rates, because I couldn't be criticized for it. And everybody criticizes me when I raise rates. I came in with the viewpoint of a victim. Here I am raising rates, and I felt victimized by the complaints of my my tenants. I came in with an overdeveloped sense of responsibility. So that meant I had to take care of everybody's problem, and I could not add to those customers' problems by raising their rate. I came in with no concern for myself, and you get praised for that in the world, because it's like, look at that guy. He only cares about others. Look what he does for them. But in truth, I was raised in the church. I'm a church boy. And one of the things you hear out of the scripture is love your neighbor as you love yourself. And in truth, even though I look like I was helping everybody, it was from a place of I had no love for myself. I came in with guilt feelings if I stood up for myself, which is very difficult. It makes it difficult to raise your rate, having those guilt feelings. And I came in with all my traumatic feelings from my childhood stuff deep down inside of me, which clogged my ability to think straight and see what was going on with normal inflation and the cost going up and the market rates. I came in judging myself harshly with an extremely low sense of self-esteem. That's hard to raise rates. And I came in terrified of abandonment, holding on to relationships desperately. And I was so afraid of raising rates because I would lose my customers. And finally, I came in as a reactor rather than an actor. And a rate raiser has to take the initial action. It's not a reaction. So you can see how big a job God had in front of him to transform this beaten man from somebody that was absolutely opposing themselves and not knowing it, to and just lost to in the inability to not debt. And God's job to transform me with a spiritual awakening to where that's five gone by. Okay. So now I can raise my prices because I value my goods and services. What a job. And I call my higher power God, by the way. So what happened? Well, the first year, this is very slow. This doesn't happen at once. Just like the promises are slowly moved into us as the compulsive debting is slowly moved out as we have many, many, many shifts, a multitude of shifts as we work our program. It takes time, but time is our friend. But the first year, I began to share in my meetings my debilitating fear of raising rates, and that January was coming, and I really needed to raise some rates. And a friend of mine in DA, Scott, said, "Monty, I think you'd rather be liked than be paid." And when he said that, it was like getting hit in the forehead with a 2x4. He got through to me. And I, in that moment, I accepted the truth of his statement. I felt the truth in that statement. I wanted to be paid rather than be liked, but I couldn't. But I recognize it and I accept it. And that was the first thing I think that happened that was good. And the first new year came, I was in program. I'm trying to raise rates on January the 1st. And I finally raised them in May. It took till May. The second year, my sponsor, I have a fabulous sponsor, Mark. And as we worked through the steps towards the end of year two, I made it to step 9. And he was having me look in the mirror every morning when I woke up and say, "I love you," looking right in my eyeballs. And I have done that for the better part of 4 years now, where I wrap my arms around myself and I say, "I love you. I accept you. I'm proud of you. I understand you. I forgive you. I work that. And that was the two main things that went on all year. And at the end of my second full year, I was now facing the second New Year's Day, and I wanted to raise rates on January, and I raised them in April. 1 year sooner. So progress, not perfection. Year three came, and I was stuck on step nine because I couldn't forgive myself, and my dadgum sponsor would not let me make my amends to anybody until I first made them to myself, and I just couldn't. I hated myself. I couldn't make them. So he sent me to ACA, and during that year, with my now another sponsor, ACA sponsor, he was able to show me over the course of that year that it wasn't my fault. The compulsive debting was not my fault. That it was a product of my DNA and my parents' issues that were passed on to me, and the way my parents raised me, and my where I grew up, how I grew up, and my traumatic experience. And when he told me, you could live 1,000 lifetimes with the same DNA, same place of birth, same parents, and every single lifetime you would have made exactly the same choices you made compulsively because you could not help it. It wasn't you making those choices. It was
10 minutes.
Okay, good. And thank you for the interruptions. That's 10 minutes with five to go. He and my sponsor said you could not have not made those decisions. And when I understood that that trauma was deep inside my cells and that it was taking the working the steps to remove that trauma and replace it with the promises, I understood it wasn't my fault. And I instantly forgave myself. It was one of the most beautiful experiences I've experienced in my lifetime. And it was shortly after that that I received recovery from compulsive debting back in DA, working, being able to work through step nine. Somewhere towards the end of step nine, it left me. Sort of, it wasn't like exactly those guys over in India, the spiritual guys, the yoga people over there, like the one I read about. I read books over there now. I grew up with Southern Baptist stuff, but now I'm reading Eastern stuff too. It's really cool. But he's standing on the banks of the Ganges. The geese were on the water, and he felt it leave him. And it never came back after that. Of course, to him, what they say left them was their self. That there's no identity, that he's no longer he, she, they, whatever. He's just that light inside that container of his body. And it's a beautiful thing. And that happened to me with compulsive debting, but I didn't know it when it happened. It was like the next day, all day long, I kept going, what's going on with me? Something's weird. What's this feeling? What is this feeling? What's going on? All day long, it's like, what is this? Finally, at the end of the day, I went, oh, my God, my mind is clean. It's clear. I'm not that compulsive debting has been removed. And it hasn't come back. That's been over 2 years now. And Bill W. was right. He was absolutely right. There wasn't a damn thing I did. It just left of its own accord. That's the miracle of it. And this program works, y'all. The last speaker said, keep coming back. It works if you work it, and work it, you're worth it. And that was so true. And in the third new year, as I got to the third new year in program and trying to raise rates in January 1st, I was able to raise them in March. And I had now gone from May to April to March. And finally, the last thing that happened to me to complete my journey of valuing my goods and services was in year four. Three things happened. Mary happened, Dan happened, and Eden happened. Mary was a salesperson we were purchasing a large purchase with, and as my manner is, I like to negotiate, and I'd already decided we were buying, and so I said, look, what can you do to give me some kind of better price? This still seems a little high.
2 minute.
And thank you, and I'll speed this up. And she said, in matter of fact, she gave me about three different things, but, oh, Monty, you're actually getting a very good deal. And she said it just like that. No combative, no. He knew her product and the competition so well. She listed those three, maybe four things. And every time she listed one, this is why this is a good price for this. And in my mind, I went, oh, my God, she's right. And the next thing, and I, oh, my God, she's right. I wasn't saying that out loud, but I was ignoring. And so that was magical for me, that experience. Like, wow, that's how I need to raise my rates. Then we went in to see our new financial stock man. He, now that we've been in DA for a few years, we're spending less than we make, and money is gathering, and we become attractive not only to our loved ones, but we become attractive to money in this program. And my business is prospering like never, never before. And we have money now. See, now we have to learn, what do we do with cash when we have extra cash? So we have a stock man, and he said, Monty, and I made a comment, and he said, Monty, he just confronted me very nicely. It's, Monty, don't dismiss the work you've done your entire life. Don't devalue your efforts. Don't diminish the work you've done. It retains value, and that value of the work you've done becomes more valuable with time. And it's like, oh my God, he's right. I have value. And finally, Eden said to me, I have a dear friend, Eden, said, when you're raising your rates, you should write down five reasons why what you're offering is more valuable than your price and the price increase. And that completed, and I went, oh my God, and I embraced that immediately. And the fourth year ended, and my fourth new year began, and I was able to raise rates in now February. And that's where they still are, because I've decided that's where I want to raise them. On January 1, I send out my 30-day notice, and the rents are raised February.
So what is it like?
That's okay. I will wrap it up now and not finish what it's like now. But let me just say thank you to God. Thank you to BDA. I'm so grateful for this journey to a new way of living that I've been given. And George, thanks for inviting me to speak. Love ya.
Thank you very much, Monty. I always love listening to you speak. You have a great story, and you've come a long way in a very short period of time. And I'm very grateful to know you. Thanks, Monty. Our third speaker is Mike S. And he's also from Vancouver, or he may be like Monty. He may prefer to say North Vancouver. And so I've known Mike for pretty much when I came into the program. And we've kept pretty close along the way. And I'm looking forward to hearing the story. So, Mike, are you around?
My name is Mike. I'm a debtor and under earner. I guess my whole thing with money started when I got sober many years ago. And I was doing my eighth step, which is a ninth step, which is about making amends. And one of the amends I had to make was to pay off at that time, which was quite some time ago, a debt to Visa. And it was $900. And at that time, I did not have $900. And I did that thing that we do, which was I kind of justified it by saying, well, it's a bank. You know, they don't need the money. And I didn't have the money. And I never did that particular thing in my ninth step. I did all the other things, all the other amends that I needed to make. But I did not do that one. And it was an unsettling feeling that it was the one incomplete thing that remained undone. And I went on for years. I had a job in advertising as a writer, and, you know, kind of lived a life, you know, of being sober and enjoying those benefits. And then I moved, I decided that I no longer, I was living in San Francisco at the time. I decided that I was no longer, I no longer wanted to do what I was doing. And I decided to take some chances, and I left San Francisco and I moved up to the Northwest, the Pacific Northwest. I moved up to a small fishing village. A friend of mine was a writer up there, and I had always wanted to be a writer. And so I moved up there with the intention that I would pursue that. And I had very little money at the time. I think I had $4,000 that I had saved. And I was living a fairly financially solvent life at that time. And I took construction work and I built sailboats, and I had always loved sailing, right? And I had a good life there, and things were going along fine. And we brought one of the boats that we had built up to Vancouver, and I looked around and I thought, oh, this is pretty nice. And I decided I would try and see if I could live in Vancouver. And I got a job in an advertising agency again, which was a sort of fallback thing, and started my life in Vancouver. And what happened was I was doing fine. And then I kind of got into this place where I kind of went up the ranks and got offered a really big job in a as the creative director of an advertising agency up here. And we did very well, and I got paid a lot of money. And at the time, I was also married and started to spend money in a way that kind of surprised me at first, but then became very kind of customary. I bought a lot of clothes. My wife was not working, and she also bought a lot of clothes. And that job went on for a couple of years. And finally, I found that I was actually going into debt and spending money that I didn't have. But, you know, I had this great job and all of that. And then what happened was I went back to New York for a conference, and I was staying in the Waldorf Astoria, and everything was very posh and taken out for lunches. And I met with all these creative directors from North America, and I was supposed to make a presentation about some commercials that we were able to produce at that time cheaply, and they wanted to know how we did that. And so what happened in the source of the so-called conference was that never happened. What happened was people sort of sat around and talked about their stock options and smoked cigars and that kind of thing. And I realized I just didn't want to do this anymore. You know, I just didn't want to be this person. It was not for me. And so I moved back to Vancouver and told my wife that I wanted to quit my job. And she said, I'll support you. And I did that. And I went in, and the guy I worked with was very understanding and gave me some, you know, money and said, you know, you've done a good job and like that. So I left the job. And then shortly after that, my wife divorced me. And I kind of went and lived in this small apartment, rented a small apartment, and realized, like, well, I was going to have to make a living, right? So I started doing freelance work. And unfortunately, the work did not show up. And I also discovered that I was $30,000 in debt, and I had no way of paying it off. And that began the cycle of debt. And what would happen was I kind of relied on this idea that there would be some windfall. You know, I was a sober member of the beverage program, and I had a higher power, and I thought this was all going to get taken care of, and I really didn't have to worry, and what I really just needed to do was concentrate on the things I wanted to do. And I did that, and the debt started to mount. And then at the end of a year, my aunt died and left me a fair amount of money. And I thought, well, that's, you know, that solved all the problems. And it was a fairly substantial amount of money. And so I began, you know, I was writing and I became an actor at the time. That was through a set of kind of unpredictable circumstances. And I thought I was just doing great, you know. And then I bought a sailboat, one of the sailboats that I had built when I was living down in that small town in Washington. And, you know, I was sailing and doing fine and, acting in the odd, you know, building my career as an actor and still doing a little bit of freelance work. And, you know, everything looked great. And then I just kept spending money. I spent money on the boat. I spent money on things I needed, and I justified it all on the idea that, well, I need this, and I have this money, and all of that. And long story short, I ended up $90,000 in debt, and had gone through all the money that I had inherited. And there I was, I can't even remember at this time, probably in my 50s at this time. And it was not looking good, you know.